Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are looking ahead to next weekend, which of course is the 4th of July. But before that comes the 3rd of July, which is First Friday, of course, and that means there's plenty to do arts-wise around town, including FoodCon at the Harrison Center for the Arts. So we're talking about that with Emily Vaness, Program Director for the Harrison Center for the Arts. And then we'll get to the 4th of July related topics, specifically barbecue, when we talk with two local chefs. First, we'll talk with Chef Ryan Nelson, whose North End Barbecue and Moonshine opened a year ago. We'll get an update on the chef, as well as some barbecue advice. Then we'll head downtown to Chef JJ's, which just opened this month at Illinois and South Streets. Chef JJ Boston fills us in on his unique business, and we'll get some grilling tips from him as well. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, there's no shortage of things to do around Indianapolis in the coming week. After all, with the 4th of July holiday coming up next Saturday, many of us will be kicking off a holiday weekend a little early, and the city's First Friday events are definitely a great way to do that, especially if your First Friday involves food, like at FoodCon. This is the fifth year for FoodCon, which is held at the Harrison Center for the Arts at 1505 North Delaware Street, and while it's an unusual event, one that manages to bring together art and food in unique ways, it is definitely a popular one. Organizers expect about 2,000 attendees for the free Friday evening event. Harrison Center for the Arts Program Director Emily Vanest tells us what to expect.
So we call FoodCon an unconventional convention for food. So we think gamers have Gen Con, everybody has their place to be and celebrate and learn, so we wanted something for foodies, and in particular, people who live downtown. That's sort of a focus of the City Gallery. So we wanted to find neighbors in our downtown urban neighborhoods who are doing interesting things with food. So not just backyard gardens, but all kinds of other really interesting out-of-the-box things.
So when I mention the FoodCon to my kids, they always say, oh, it had the chickens, right? So in the past, we have seen chickens at FoodCon, for example.
Sadly, this year there's a ban on moving poultry because of bird flu, so we will not have chickens for the first year. But we will have some people who raise chickens and who will have their cages and could talk about how easy it is to do. But there's actually a state ban on moving poultry this year, so sad disappointment. We'll have goats. So.
Oh, okay, now see, maybe goats are even better from my kids' perspective.
They might love it, yes.
Now, they also remember a display early on. It was a big table full of fruit, and they were allowed to eat the fruit, but they thought it was also sort of artistically done as well. They didn't understand really if it was refreshments or art, but we've remembered some of the things that we've seen here at FoodCon and talk about it. So maybe that, you know, is part of the idea, right? Get people talking?
Definitely to get people talking, but there's all kinds of things that would just be so exciting for you to see what people are doing. There are people in our city who are growing fish in their basement. There are people who are growing vegetables hydroponically, so with just water, not with soil, not in the ground. There are people who do solar cooking and car cooking on the engine of your car, worm composting, regular composting. I mean, just all kinds of great ideas.
Tell me a little bit about the history of FoodCon and how it all came about.
So FoodCon actually started as a Harrison Center intern project. An intern had a love for food, and we love to help our interns find a way to realize their passions, to connect them in some way to art and the mission of the Harrison Center. So the very first FoodCon 5 years ago was that. It was a collaboration between our artists here and local food vendors. It was a huge event in the gym. It's changed over the years and had different, we've tried different things every year. Last year, we actually did art and wine pairings. So we had different wines that coordinated with some of our paintings. This year, we have a gym full of really fun activities for kids and for the family to be involved in, things to draw and write and create and smell and feel and touch. So it'll be a really fun event to bring your kids out to again this year.
So that kind of has carried on through the years, right?
Yes, it is. FoodCon has always been an intern project. So this year, Sarah Feige, who's a university student, is organizing everything about FoodCon. She has contacted all the vendors and the food trucks. She's written all the permits, applied for everything, booked the tents, booked the vendors. So she's been an amazing resource for us. And it's been a really great learning experience for her. It's great job experience.
You know, you mentioned you describe it as an unconventional sort of thing. How's the reception been? Have people embraced that sort of unconventionality of FoodCon?
Absolutely. And I feel like I get new ideas every year. There's just things that people don't know about how easy it is to do some of these things until you see one of your neighbors doing it, things that you never would have thought of. We actually started worm composting because of FoodCon. It's really an easy and fun thing. We bought a garden tower last year, which is a way to grow all of your vegetables in a cylinder that's about 5 feet tall and 3 feet in diameter. We can grow all of our vegetables in that tower. So we get fun ideas every year, and I'm sure the rest of the community does too.
Now, when people walk up, what can they expect? Do you have some of the things are outside, some of them are inside, right?
Mm-hmm. This year, all of our neighbors who are displaying what they do with food will be outside. We have a big tent outside. So the food trucks will be parked in the front, then the tent with all of the people, all of our neighbors who are sharing their food ideas. And then when you go inside, we have our normal 4 galleries that will be open with brand new exhibits. And then in the gym are lots of activities, not just for kids, but for adults alike. So July is also the month that we celebrate the citywide porch party. We started this last year, and we invited neighbors all across the city to open up their front porches and have their neighbors over for a party. We had 130 people sign up to host parties. You can still sign up this year to host a party. The first 60 people that have their neighbors over, take a photo, and write a blog post about it will get a $25 gift certificate to a local restaurant. So we'll be having our own porch party during First Friday, and our City Gallery show is called Porch Party. It will feature various artists in our building who are inspired by and painting about porch parties.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. So that's happening in the City Gallery. Emma Overman, who is a local favorite, will be in the main gallery that night as well.
Now, tell me just a little bit more about the porch parties, because I signed up to do a porch party, so I'm very excited about this year. Tell me about the origin of that.
Fantastic. Thanks for signing up. We are always looking for ways to help people to connect to their neighborhood, to their neighbors, to their city. And so last year, it was just an idea. Some of my neighbors in my neighborhood do this regularly. We thought it would be really fun. There were people across the city who said they didn't know their neighbors and met everyone on their street through their porch party. People who had never had anyone over to their home and did it this time, and it became this regular thing that they did all summer long. It was really beautiful to see people in every neighborhood across the city come together this way. And we think it's a welcoming, easy thing to do. It doesn't take much to host a porch party. We had one the other night. You open a bottle of wine, you sit on your porch. Cheap and easy. As your neighbors walk by, they come up and join you. It's a lot of fun. So I'm glad that you signed up, and we would encourage anybody to sign up for this.
So it's sort of a low-stress thing, you know, that people aren't, you know, it's not like you have to clean your whole house.
Right.
You know? And, you know, people just kind of stand around the front yard. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
That's great. Me too.
Now, how do people sign up for that if they want to host a porch party?
If you go to www.citygalleryindy.org, that's one of our websites, and the information, the link to sign up is on that site.
Now, how many people come out, and how many vendors do you have, and exhibits, that sort of thing?
This year we have between 25 and 30 people who will be talking about what they do in their homes. We have a wide variety of audiences, usually around 2,000 people.
So
So
that's kind of a big turnout, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Now, is there a cost for this? Tell me a little details on that sort of thing.
Just like all of our first Fridays, it's absolutely free. Come out and attend, and we will have food trucks that are outside that'll be selling food, duos, scratch, spice box, nicey treat, come get really great ice cream or popsicles, and flying cupcake this year.
Now, are there any other things that will be available at FoodCon? Are there, you mentioned the food trucks, are there art vendors, any of that sort of thing?
Many of our studio artists will have their studios open, so you can always look around, walk through the whole building. You never know what you'll find. There are always people here working.
We've been talking with Emily Van Nest of the Harrison Center for the Arts about the July 3rd FoodCon event. For more information on FoodCon, look for the event on Facebook. Well, it's barely summer. The season officially arrived last week, and already it's racing by. It's been a month since Memorial Day, and now we're looking squarely in the face of the 4th of July with all its cookouts, family reunions, and backyard barbecues. And speaking of barbecues, now that's a word loaded with meaning. Is it truly an event, a backyard barbecue? Or is it something you cook on, as in be sure to oil the grates of the barbecue before you start cooking? Or do you think of barbecue as primarily a type of food with regional variations, as in Texas barbecue or Kansas City barbecue? Or is it simply an adjective? Don't forget to buy barbecue sauce. But no matter how you slice it, yes, pun intended, we are definitely in barbecue season. If you're one of those for whom barbecue is synonymous with grilling, because the 4th of July is the number one grilling day of the year. Because if you have a grill, and a majority of U.S. adults do, it's a good bet you will be using it next weekend. So, in honor of the upcoming barbecue extravaganza that is the 4th of July, Eat Drink Indiana Radio has turned to a couple of local chefs for a little business backstory and a few cooking tips, too. First up is Chef Ryan Nelson, owner of the Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine, both of which are located along 86th Street in Indianapolis. I stopped in recently to check in with the busy chef and catch up on what's cooking.
My first kitchen job was in 1995. Yes, 95. It was a summer job. I was living in Spearfish, South Dakota, because I wanted to hike and camp in the Black Hills. And I got a job washing dishes at an Italian restaurant called Little Bit of Italy, which we called Little Bit. That's what everybody called it. And after like a week or so of washing dishes, somebody, left or got fired. I don't remember. And the next thing I know, I was making salads. And then a week later, I'm making pizza or pasta. And that was the start of it. And then
how old were you?
I was a sophomore in college. And, I had had some other stuff as a kid, like 15, 16, I worked at a deli, but I don't really count that. Although I still eat at that deli when I go home. And then it just became kind of a way to make money while I was going to school. When I got back to the U, to Minnesota, I got a job at a campus place. And then I always had kitchen jobs while in college. And then
what were you studying?
English. Yeah, I wanted to be a teacher.
What were you going to be, like a high school teacher or college teacher?
One or the other. Yeah, depending on how serious or what happened. But I ended up falling in love with the industry and with the adrenaline and just with food, I guess. And by the time I was done with school, I kind of had a career and decided to go that way. My parents weren't real pleased. I think they kind of saw me as the education as maybe a waste, and maybe saw me as like a guy with a toque on his head. And they didn't really get the, this was all pre, Food Network, or it was just kind of starting then.
So the chefs weren't the rock stars that people see them as today?
No, it was really, really just, I think, in the mid-90s, just starting. But I mean, after a few years, my parents saw how serious I was about it, and obviously things have worked out, and so I can be happy with my choice.
What were you studying?
Literature.
Yeah?
Yep.
What specific category?
Focus was actually in poetry, but,
did you write?
I did.
Do you write?
Not currently. I'm too busy. Much to the chagrin of my wife.
Oh, I love that. So that's very neat, I think,
Yeah.
What's your favorite poet?
I always liked the Beats, like Ferlinghetti and Ginsberg and those guys. They were probably my favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you going to hit the road?
It's pretty romantic in college to that kind of mentality and that that kind of lifestyle for sure.
So you ended up, though, in the kitchen, and we were talking about, you know, how that has changed during your career. So what was it like when you first got your, you know, your first sous chef or chef job?
For me, it was a financial reward because there was years spent as a line cook where you live pretty much at the kind of at the poverty level, and you're fortunate that you can get a meal or two meals at work because you are kind of scraping by at, you know, 9 to 11 or 12 bucks an hour. I was fortunate I didn't have any debt coming out of school, so I was fortunate in that. I mean, it would have been a real struggle. So financially, it was nice to get a salary and get benefits and get some professional recognition and get your name on your coat. And
so when was that, and where were you when you got to that kind of point?
I was a lead cook at the Palomino in Minneapolis for almost 3 years, and then my first sous position was actually with the Ocean Air in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and that was in 99, 2000.
And when did you come to Indianapolis?
I moved to Indy in 03, in the summer of 03, to open up the Ocean Air here as a partner.
What was that like? And what was the city like in 03?
There wasn't a lot of choices. There wasn't a lot of options. Obviously, Greg and Regina were both going really strong, and those were fun places to go to, Elements and our bistro. But there wasn't nearly as many independents as there is now.
A lot of steakhouses then, as there are now. But so downtown was, you know, heavy on the steakhouses, like it is now. But so you were opening Ocean Air, and that was a little different.
It was, and having Ocean Air that way, we were kind of the alternative to steak downtown, and we had a great run because of that, where if conventioneers were in town for 2 days, they would go to Elmo's, obviously, for one night, but that second night, they would, you know, more often than not, come to us. And it was a juggernaut. I mean, it was a really, really busy restaurant from 04 to 08, and just a fantastic time.
Yeah, you had a lot of freedom there. I mean, it was a corporate-owned, but you had freedom to do kind of what you wanted to, right?
Yeah, we could purchase product from whoever we wanted. So, you know, we were able to buy from local producers. And the meat of the menu, yeah, we had a lot of core dishes, but we also had, you know, a handful, well, half dozen or so specials that changed every day. A lot of that was dependent upon what fish was available. There was a couple years there where I bought over $1 million worth of fish in a year. Yeah, so, I mean, just the actual, like, nuts and bolts and clipboards and the staff, and at one point I had 4 sous chefs. Like, it was just a colossus, and a lot of fun. Yeah.
So you became a part of the city, though. You became very active in the local food community and kind of ran it like an independent restaurant.
We were encouraged to become involved in the community, and it's easy to get involved in the community, and it's easy to I think in a town like Indianapolis where people are nice. It was an easy transition where I think if we would have been in a Chicago or a Philly or something like Houston, I think that's much tougher. But we were welcome with open arms, and it was really easy to make friends here and to get involved.
And so this is where you decided to stay to open your own restaurant. So talk a little bit about opening Late Harvest.
Sure. Ocean Air, after the financial crisis in 08, sold to a company out of Texas, and I felt it was time to look elsewhere for something to do, and I'd met my wife here as well, and we wanted to stay here, and we wanted to raise a family here, so it was, and I thought I could be successful here, too, so we opted to stay, and I'm glad that we did.
So Late Harvest opened going on 4 years ago,
yep.
And then a year ago, you opened the North End Barbecue Moonshine. So talk a little bit about that and why barbecue. And, you know, it's very different from Late Harvest.
For sure. There's not many people or restaurant people that have 2 restaurants on the same street, but we really like 86th Street. And we felt that we had enough of a following here that we could create another dining room for our core clientele. And barbecue has always been something that's very important to me and something that I'm very interested in. And initially, actually, when the Landry sale went down, I almost left on the spot and went and opened a small barbecue restaurant. Wow. But ended up doing it much later, and at the with the help of my partner. I've got a just a fantastic partner. His name is Phil Larman. He's a local real estate developer. Just a super guy. He's my landlord here at Late Harvest and my landlord at the other restaurant as well. And he had a deal with another chef and it kind of fell through. And he gave me a call and he was like, hey, let's do another restaurant. Are you ready? And I said, yeah, you bet. And he goes, I think your barbecue. And I have concepts for different geographic areas around the city in mind. And we thought that the barbecue would go really well there.
We've been talking with Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. We'll be back with more from Ryan here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, you know it will happen. Sometime next weekend, you will be out in the backyard, either your own or someone else's, and you'll be waiting for something to come off the grill, and maybe offering a little commentary on the cooking technique of whoever happens to actually be manning the grill. But whether you'll be having burgers and dogs for the 4th of July, the most popular items to grill, by the way, or whether you're doing quick kebabs or you're going the all-day route with smoked brisket, you know you could probably use a few tips. And for that, Eat Drink Indiana Radio turned to local chef Ryan Nelson, who owns a Late Harvest Kitchen, and his newest restaurant, the North End Barbecue and Moonshine, which opened last year in the Nora neighborhood.
Well, I looked around at at some of the national chains that are in town, City Barbecue and Famous Dave's, and Famous Dave's is a publicly traded company, so you can like see their financials and you can see like how well they're doing, and they're doing really well. And I thought that we could do better. And I thought that, you know, having a partner like Phil and being able to build a nice restaurant, we could make it look great and we could open the restaurant the right way and offer something better. And I think when you look at Indy, you know, an hour and a half south of here, accents start to change, and we're right on the edge of the South. And I think that our barbecue offerings, with the exception of a few places in town, are, you know, leave something to be desired. So I thought we could add to that.
Why this particular type of barbecue? Because you have several different varieties, right?
Sure. Barbecue, like I see as a national cuisine, but within that national cuisine, it's all about regionality and, you know, what they do in the Carolinas and Tennessee and what they do in, you know, Kansas City and St. Louis and, you know, what they do in Texas and whether it be brisket or whether it be, you know, pulled pork and Carolina gold sauce. We wanted to celebrate each of the areas with barbecue.
Now talk a little bit about barbecue as an American cuisine, because, you know, if, you know, people, you know, we, America gets a little, you know, a little flack for not having rich, you know, culinary heritage, but we kind of do when you start looking at something like barbecue.
Yeah, I think barbecue is all about tradition, and it all comes down to technique and time and temperature and, you know, proper seasoning, and it's pervasive. It's when I started opening the restaurant, when we were talking about opening the restaurant, the first thing out of everybody's mouth was, I love barbecue. Like, I'm opening a, I mean, they were telling me this, so I mean, opening a barbecue restaurant, but like, that was what everybody said was, I love barbecue. And that was really encouraging when you're going into the, you know, scary enterprise of opening a restaurant, hearing all this positive reinforcement, like, I mean, everybody likes barbecue.
Well, now, how do you describe barbecue? Because I think the description is a little bit different. Some people think of barbecue as a verb, you know, something you do, or others, you know, see it as a noun, you know, that barbecue is a thing.
Mm-hmm. It's both. Yeah. All day it's both. Our smokers run pretty much 24/7. So in that respect, it's a verb. But we refer to the restaurant as barbecue. And that's, you know, it is what it is.
So you do have smokers going at the restaurant, and that was built, you know, specifically for what you're doing, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're two smokers. They hold almost 1,000 pounds apiece. And then we cook throughout the night. The briskets take up to 14 hours. And then, so sometimes people get frustrated when at 9:30 or later at night that we run out of brisket. It's like, well, they take 14 hours. And you know, and it's a walk-in heavy restaurant because it's more casual. People make reservations at Late Harvest, but at North End, they just walk in if the weather's nice or they feel like having barbecue. So it's kind of a guessing game, and we've gotten better at it, but when we're out, because it takes hours.
You can't just rush and run back into the kitchen and whip some up, right?
No, it is what it is. So with our forecast and our planning, we have to take that into account. But then we do our pork butts overnight as well. Those are 8 to 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours, depending on the size. And then in the morning, first thing in, we throw ribs on and chicken on for lunch, sausage on for lunch, turkey on for lunch, and then we'll do another run late in the afternoon for our dinner service as well.
So what do people need to know about barbecue and the different styles? Because, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, throw some ribs on the grill and call it barbecue.
I think that's totally fine. I mean, everyone kind of thinks of themselves as a whiz on the grill or, you know, master of their barbecue, or their grill. And that's a real American thing, I think, to, you know, grill some steaks or some chicken or some ribs and have a beverage in one hand. That's kind of what we're all about. And as far as what they need to know about my place is, you know, we're happy to explain it tableside. We don't make it, it's not very complicated. We just leave all the sauces on the side and let people apply, you know, as they want or as they need.
Yeah, because I think people think of pulled pork and they envision it with maybe some with the sauce, right, all mixed together. And so yours are separate, right? And so tell me about the kinds of sauces that you have and how you came up with them.
Sure. I love the Carolina Gold, which is a mustard. It's a 3 mustard base sauce with vinegar. It's really tangy. The vinegar really shines through. That mustard has a nice base note to it, and that goes perfect with pulled pork and ribs too, for that matter. So that's our Carolina Gold. We've got a KC sauce, which is like tomatoes and molasses, what you see in Missouri and both St. Louis and Kansas City. That's kind of sticky sweet, and people really like that on spare ribs, St. Louis cut spare ribs. And then we've got our Texas Red, which has guajillo, ancho, and chipotle chilies that we steep in vinegar, and that that mixture we call Texas tea. And then we add tomatoes and some brown sugar, and that's our Texas Red sauce. And then we have a classic sauce, which is kind of our most approachable and I think kind of appeals to a wide range. And that's just like a classic barbecue sauce.
Now tell me again the types of barbecue that you're doing. You know, you mentioned the brisket and the ribs, right?
Yeah, the Texas brisket. In Texas, brisket's a way of life. And
how so? Tell me.
Everybody does brisket. Everybody loves brisket. Brisket is at the forefront of every barbecue restaurant in Texas. And it's all about beef. I was fortunate enough to take a trip with my dad, and we kind of raced around Austin, like kind of hill country area, and hit as many barbecue restaurants as we were able to, and as we were able to like physically handle. I think one morning we woke up, and my dad's like, "I don't think I can do it again." He's like, "I'm still full," and I'm like, "We're going. We have like 4 or 5 places to hit today for lunch." But we had a fantastic time, and. I just love brisket. I love the smoke ring. We only use salt and pepper on ours. We're pretty. My chef Mitch thinks that we're real cocky to do that, but he loves it that we only use salt and pepper. We don't use a marinade or a special rub. We just trust in the quality of the meat and our technique. Mm-hmm. So that's Texas is all about brisket.
And then you have 2 kinds of ribs. Yes.
Yep, we do Memphis babies, baby backs, and then we have the spare ribs as well. I actually had a half rack of each for dinner last night.
And the pulled pork, right?
Yep. Yeah, we do a ton of pulled pork. I would say pulled pork and brisket are probably neck and neck, depending on the day, as far as what we sell more of.
Really?
Yep, very close.
Now, how much of that would you go through in a regular day?
It kind of depends. Like on a Monday, we might fire 5 or 6 briskets. On a Friday or Saturday, we might fire 25 briskets.
Oh, my gosh.
It kind of depends on the day. Same thing with the pork butts, anywhere from 6 to, you know, 15 in a day. So we go through a lot of product.
Are there things that people, you know, when just your regular person is cooking, that they might tend to, I don't know, it's not to say do wrong, but the things that they could do better, you know, when they're trying to do this, when they're out there on their grill, you know, thinking that they're going to come up with a really terrific barbecue?
I think with any cooking, I think people are always so worried about, like, serving things undercooked. That they inadvertently overcook things, and just like take it off the grill, it's done. You know, you're fine. You're not gonna get anybody sick. You know, the thing was cooked 3 minutes ago, and then also probably under seasoning, where you know, not just seasoning at the end when the dish is complete, but seasoning throughout the process.
So tell me a little bit about some of those components that are important, you know, because you salted things all the way through the cooking process, right?
Yeah, we try and add flavor and layer flavors throughout the process of each dish, whether it be with salt and pepper, whether it be with lemon juice, whether it be with vinegar, oil, fat, just every step along the process, we try and add something to the dish. And that's how you layer flavors.
Well, you know, we're coming up on the height of the barbecue season, the backyard cookout season. Any advice for people, you know, who might be wanting to up their game a little bit?
I think it's probably best to just get to-go food from the North End Barbecue. And,
of course, right?
Yeah. Actually, we're closed on the 4th. We close for all major holidays. Uh-huh. I've always felt that you garner more goodwill and out of your staff by closing on those holidays. But as far as making stuff at home, I would say, like we talked about earlier, have all your stuff ready to go. You don't want to cook, especially if you're entertaining, you don't want to be chopping stuff up or putting things together while your guests are there, your family's there. You want to be able to enjoy your company. So I would say, before everybody gets there, have it all set. You know, have all your ingredients and bowls lined up on a tray.
So this is like what people see chefs do, your mise en place, right, where you have all right. The ingredients measured out and ready to grab, so you're not, like, racing around for the garlic at the last minute.
Right. Yeah, I think it'll lend an air of professionalism if you have all your stuff already laid out and ready to go. And it's just easier. Who wants to be frantic when you're entertaining or when you're trying to relax?
We've been talking grilling and barbecue with Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. You can find more information about Chef Ryan and his restaurants at lateharvestkitchen.com and thenorthendbbq.com. When you're talking grilling, and we have been talking grilling here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio today, the lines are often clearly drawn between charcoal and gas with your Weber kettle and even your apartment balcony hibachi folks squaring off against the gleaming stainless steel gas-powered contingent. But lately there's another crowd, and this one has something of a cult following. You have to consider the eggheads, fans of the oval-shaped, Komodo-style ceramic grills known as Big Green Eggs. They're known for their ability to maintain a steady temperature for long amounts of time. These grills have become so popular that Indianapolis even has a chef who only uses Big Green Eggs for all his cooking events and classes. And Chef J.J. Boston and his pastry chef Jenna Gatchel certainly do a lot of classes. In fact, they just opened a new facility in downtown Indianapolis where they offer even more classes and special events than they could in their original Broad Ripple location. I stopped in at the new Chef J.J.'s, located at the corner of Illinois and South Streets in downtown Indianapolis, for a look at the new space, which is sure to be plenty popular. It's a magnificent building. It is. And so tell me how you found the location for the new space and what you were thinking when you saw it.
Sure. I found the location from my realtor. I put him on a mission to look for possible locations for a second Chef J.J. store. He showed me this space with the intent. He understood my business model and how we operated and said, this is a perfect space for you. Everyone else who's looking at it sees it as an old bar, and they don't want to put the money required to make it right. And this is a great location for you and all that good stuff. So,
And it's right downtown, so it's right on the corner of Illinois and South. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah. We're corner of Illinois and South. We're just west of the Slippery Noodle. We're Slippery Noodle's neighbors, and our front door is on South Street.
Now, so explain the concept of Chef J.J.'s, because, you know, you do have the location in Broad Ripple, but it is a little puzzling maybe for people because they do want to just, like, walk in and have lunch.
Sure. We don't make it super easy for our clients because we call it Chef J.J.'s, but we are not a restaurant. We're ticketed only and private events only. So in order to come into our stores and have a great meal, you have to buy tickets to it, or you have to book the space yourself. And that's been a real nice model for us.
It's all focused around the Big Green Egg, right?
It is, yes. The Big Green Egg is the core of our business. The menus are all based around the Big Green Egg, which is a ceramic, Kamado-style a charcoal grill, and all of the menus have that influence for sure. So they're definitely not your everyday run-of-the-mill kind of wine dinners and beer dinners. They definitely have a different flair to them.
And completely cooked on the Big Green Egg, right?
Completely cooked on the Big Green Egg. Yeah, we've had to change some things around and make some adjustments to recipes, especially in Chef Jenna's world, being a pastry chef and graduating from culinary school and then having to cook everything on a grill.
Now, tell me a little bit about that, Jenna, about doing all the desserts on what is essentially a type of grill, right?
Absolutely. So when I came to Chef JJ, I said, great, I'm out of culinary school, I'm ready to go, where do I bake? And he said, right here in this grill. And I said, you've got to be kidding me, this is not what I learned. But it does operate on a pretty even basis. If a recipe says 350 degrees, you cook it at 350 degrees in direct heat. You just have to make sure you don't smoke any fish before you cook your apple pie.
But you do bake all sorts of things, right? Pies and cake and all sorts of things, right?
Oh, yes. We've done pies, cakes, cheesecakes, creme brulees, tarts, souffles, macaroons, pretty much anything. Yeah.
How did all this start? Kind of go a little bit to your background, JJ, and tell us kind of how all this sort of Big Green Egg stuff came about.
It's really just been a natural evolution. I was a corporate chef for a lot of years. Burnout in that world, left the corporate world to start my own personal chef business. And from there, I would act as any other personal chef or private chef. I'd go to people's homes and I'd bring my totes and tools and go into their kitchen and cook for them. Sometimes I'd get to interact with them. Sometimes I was just the help. But that was the model. And then came to a client's house. He said, hey, I've heard great things about you. And I got this grill and I want you to cook dinner on it for me tonight. And I was like, okay, I get paid no matter what I'm cooking on. So you want me to cook on a grill tonight? Great, fine. I'll hang out on the deck and grill. And he geeked out about his Big Green Egg and told me how great it was. And that's the best thing ever. And showed me how to use it. And after that night, I was like, yep, that's the best thing ever. And
really? Now, tell me why it was the best thing ever. Because the people who get attached to their eggs, the eggheads, right?
Yes.
They get very, very attached to them.
They do. It's some people call it almost like a cult following, and we call them eggheads, and they spend lots of time trying to sell their grills or their, you know, sell other people on the egg. And
yeah, kind of evangelizing, right?
It really, really is. And really the biggest difference from a professional chef's perspective is that it cooks at the exact temperature you want it to cook at, and it cooks with really, really moist heat. And having exacting temperature control and a really moist heat gives you a broad range of things that you can do and do them really, really well. You know, we can slow cook stuff and hold within 2 degrees for 20, 24 hours at a time. And that's a really important thing when you're slow cooking something.
Oh, sure, and you probably do a lot of meats, right? Like
that. We do a lot of slow cooked meats, yep, absolutely. We'll play around with protein a lot, but we'll add in the veggies as well. Like I said, we have tons of garden space at home. We have our rooftop garden here, and we also have a little bit of gardening space at our backyard location, and we're always incorporating stuff out of the garden as much as we can.
Now, tell me a little bit about the timeline for when you opened Chef JJ's Backyard in Broad Ripple, and then how you ended up down here.
I started the personal chef business in 2005, and then in 2009 we opened up the store in Broad Ripple, and then here a few weeks ago we opened up this store. So we're on a, you know, four or five year plan.
Now, what was the process like? Because people might remember the Ugly Monkey and the deck that was out there, because it doesn't look anything like it did.
No, it's a 100% transformation. It was a complete remodel. There's really not an original piece of anything inside of this building. The deck was removed and a new building erected on top of that empty lot. And then what was the old Ugly Monkey was completely gutted to just the exterior walls. New roof, new floor, wiring, electrical, HVAC, all of that. It was a full build. It would have been easier to tear the building down and build a new one.
Now describe it a little bit, because you have several different spaces here, including, like you said, the rooftop deck.
So we've designed the building for to have three different spaces so that we can host three different parties at the same time without any of them interacting with each other, keep it all private. And we have an atrium, which is a beautiful, huge open space that leads onto our patio that's a street-side patio.
And that's where the people might see that as they're walking by, going to Colts games, that sort of thing.
That's exactly right, yep. As they're doing the what the city calls the South Street Crawl, walking from the parking lots over the Colts Stadium, they'll walk right by our patio. Our eggs are curbside, so you'll be real close up to the action and probably have an opportunity to walk onto that patio and maybe enjoy some food and beverage.
Now, what are the other spots? So the patio and the atrium are where you could see that from the street, but then there are other spaces as well.
Exactly. So we have two other spaces. The other space we call the gallery, and that's really a reincarnation of our backyard culinary experience. It's has several TVs and cameras, and we set it up in a classroom style or for hands-on, and it is real interactive, and it's real cool. You get to see all the action and everything being prepared. And then our other space is our rooftop. We created a rooftop loft, so it's real private and exclusive, and connected to that loft is our rooftop garden. We had some special beds built that are real conducive to growing stuff on top of a roof, and put a nice patio out over there, or on top of that, overlooking Lucas Oil, so it should be fun.
It is. You see it. I mean, you are right there looking at Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah. I always joke that I could probably get there with a 9-iron.
We've been talking with Chef J.J. Boston and pastry chef Jenna Gatchell, who offer classes and events that focus on grilling on the Big Green Egg at their new Chef J.J.'s downtown. We'll be back with more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. When it comes to cooking out on the grill, true fans say they cook year-round. And in that category, you will definitely find Chef J.J. Boston and pastry chef Jenna Gatchell of Chef J.J.'s, which offers private events and grilling classes in Indianapolis. In fact, all the food at a Chef J.J.'s class or a beer or wine dinner is cooked on the ceramic grills known as Big Green Eggs. And pastry chef Jenna prepares all the desserts on the grill as well, even cakes and cookies and brownies. For a few tips on grilling just in time for next weekend's holiday get-togethers, I stopped in at the new Chef J.J.'s location in downtown Indianapolis for a little 4th of July grilling advice. So tell me a little bit about how a Big Green Egg is different from a regular grill and why you like it and why you use it.
Sure. So the Big Green Egg is completely different from any other grill that you've owned, probably because they've all been metal. And the Green Egg is ceramic. And metal conducts heat and energy. So you're constantly making fire and making heat to make up for the fact you're losing it so quickly. Like this morning a rainstorm came through, and if your grill was on, it probably got really cold because it got covered in water and you lost all of your heat. Versus a Big Green Egg, it's ceramic, it absorbs all the heat you're creating. So it's not affected by wind and rain and cold and hot. It's not affected by any of that stuff. So it operates the same way every time, regardless of weather, which makes it really, really nice to cook on because you have predictable outcomes every time.
How do you go about starting to cook on a Big Green Egg, and what are the differences that you might see if now I have a Big Green Egg, right? And I've had a Weber kettle or gosh knows maybe a gas grill all this time. How is the cooking different?
So what you're going to experience first is that it's uses natural lump charcoal versus gas or charcoal briquettes. Natural lump charcoal is pure wood that's been petrified, so it's just coal. And we use that as our fuel source. And lighting it, we just use all natural fire starters to light it. Because of the shape of the egg and the way it operates, it almost acts like its own chimney. So there's no need to put your charcoal in one of those chimney starters, get it, and then dump it in. We just put the charcoal right in the egg, put our fire starters in there, light it, close the lid, open the vents, and it starts a natural draw of air and we'll get that egg to about 400 degrees in 10 minutes. So it'll get hot real quickly. And that's the great thing, us being retail-based and selling the Green Egg, we educate everyone how to use the egg properly and then give them all sorts of recipes and cooking tips and all that stuff.
So what are some advice that you might have for people who are maybe just starting out?
Yeah. No, the common tips that we like to give people with new grills are don't try anything too difficult too fast. Start off with some burgers. Start off with some sausages. Start off with some easy, you know, maybe do a spatchcock chicken or a whole roasted chicken or something like that. And then once you get comfortable controlling the heat, which is quite easy, it's just a little bit of a mind shift to give it less air and slow down that heat a little bit. Once you get comfortable with that, then you can try the more complicated things that do really require good accuracy, like a brisket or baby back ribs or something to that effect. I know people get really excited, and that's the first things they want to do, and those are the two hardest things you can possibly pick out to do. So.
Or maybe the desserts. You know, now tell me about because people, they can do it too, right? I mean, you know, you know the magic that you do here, you know, at Chef JJ's, they can recreate that with some practice, right?
Absolutely. My recommendation for anyone who wants to start baking on the egg is buy a box of cake mix because it's cheap and it's easy to start over. And then once you start to get a handle for it, then you can start making things from scratch. You can do really anything on it. Anytime that we do a desserts class, people are just amazed. We do everything from breads, pizzas. I think the most fun thing we've done, we did a Chipotle smoked creme brulee. So there are some things that we do want the smoke there for, but you obviously have to make sure that it's not something coming from pork fat or, you know, salmon or fish or something like that.
So any thoughts on what might be in it? Some easy things to work up to, and I so say I practice on some cake mixes for a while, and I feel like maybe my cakes are coming out all right. So what would be a next thing that you might move up to?
The things I think people have the most success with are any types of the cookies. Brownies seem to go over really well. We recently did an olive oil cake at Eggfest, and it's been a huge hit. It actually is vegan as well, and even the people who are not vegan cannot wait to get the recipe.
JJ, what are some tips on grilling? Some things that maybe people tend to do wrong, no matter what type of grilling they're doing.
Yeah, so no matter what type of grilling you're doing, you want to make sure your grill's operating at the proper temperature. You want to give yourself enough time to grill and cook stuff. That's probably the biggest thing, especially when it comes to slow cooking or smoking. A lot of people will try to put themselves up against the pressure and say, okay, all my guests are coming over at 4, and I'm going to start this morning, and I hope it's done. And I recommend people, if you're doing slow cooking, start it the day before, because if it takes some extra time, you're not up against that clock, and then it's very, very easy to reheat barbecue. And it's actually a lot of times would taste a little bit better if you give it that extra day of rest anyway. If you're doing direct grill, you're grilling burgers and dogs and chicken wings and all of that, just stay organized with the different foods. You don't want to go out there in the heat and have your raw food just sitting there on the table or sitting there on the counter while it's waiting to go on the grill. Don't try to do too much. I'm a big advocate of make all your guests bring some food and you focus on a couple of great things and it'll be a good party.
Yeah, see, that seems like it's a very much chef advice. You know, be organized, yeah. have all your things out there for yourself. You know, keep, you know, the cold things cold, the hot things hot.
Yes.
But I think that's something that people at home maybe tend to forget about, right?
They forget a little bit, and it's especially because people aren't necessarily grilling every day, and so they're a little bit out of their routines, and they're doing stuff they might normally do, and then they're dragging it outside, and so it's you know, if you feel like you're a pretty clean cook in the kitchen and all that, just keep those same practices and just keep the food inside until you need it for sure.
Now, are there some things that people tend to cook, you know, all the time, and maybe they should like broaden their horizons a little bit? Are there some, you know, because, you know, the burgers and dogs and probably chicken tend to be the things people throw on the grill most often?
Yes, you're right, and it's because they are the easiest to cook and they are the most readily available. I would recommend if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to do some things a little bit differently, maybe if you're going to do a burger, maybe you try some different meats instead of just ground beef. Go ahead and grab some ground lamb or some ground turkey. You can get those from your local butcher shop, your grocery store. Most of those places have different ground meats, and combine them up for a little bit different flavor burgers. Instead of just buying your commodity hot dogs or sausages, go to your local butcher and get some fresh sausage from them. If you want to, and my number one thing with chicken, because everybody cooks chicken, I do what's called a calibration on chicken. I would love for you to cook a piece of chicken and pull it off when you're convinced it's undercooked and see how far away you really are, because a lot of people will overcook chicken because they're afraid of serving undercooked chicken.
Oh, everyone has probably had more dry chicken off the grill than I don't know what.
Yes.
So tell me about that. So take it off when I think it's not quite done?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a calibration for people who are they always overcook their chicken. I say, okay, just take a piece that you don't want to serve to anybody. Pull it off when you're convinced it's not done. Probably half the amount of time that you normally cook it. Let it rest and then slice into it and see how far away you really are. And most people come to me and say, that was perfectly cooked chicken.
Okay, that's funny. All right, so people are cooking their chicken twice as long as they should.
And it's out of fear. At some point, I'm not sure when it happened, but when the grilling gods came down, they said, you are not allowed to undercook anything. You are not, you know, if you put something on the table and it's undercooked, you lose your grilling card. And we just don't operate that way. It's much easier to say, oh, Jolene, you want your steak cooked a little bit more? No problem. Take your steak, put it back on the grill, cook it a little bit more.
You can cook it more, right? You can.
It's very hard to uncook food. We've tried, and it doesn't work at all.
We've been talking with Chef J.J. Boston and pastry chef Jenna Gatchel of Chef J.J.'s. For more information on the locations, classes, and special events, go to chefjjs.com. You've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio on WFYI HD 2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thanks so much for tuning in to the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Harrison Center for the Arts Program Director, Emily Vaness, Chef Ryan Nelson of the North End Barbecue and Moonshine and Late Harvest Kitchen, and Chef J.J. Boston and Pastry Chef Jenna Gatchel of Chef J.J.'s. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.